Good morning from sunny Syracuse, baby. Yes, this morning I am actually in Syracuse for PETS training. The hell is PETS? President-elect training sessions for Rochester Rotary, where I am president-elect and become president on July 1st of this year. And it's a big responsibility, and there's a lot of training that goes into it. And so, yes, I am coming to you from a hotel room in Syracuse. A very short intro today because, frankly, I just want to get this thing posted and out, and I want you to hear this. This is the breaking news that we have been promising you with John Swan, the owner of the conglomerate, Swan Family Conglomerate. Last week, I think when I was introducing him, I couldn't even name all the restaurants. Of course, if I was a professional, I would have written them down and gotten them right, but he has, at this point, Oxenstone, Swan Dive. Does he still have a piece of Daily Refresher? I'm not sure. He has Pearson's, Vern's, Leonore's, Dorado, Rue. I mean, how many? I think he literally has like 8 restaurants at this point. So this is the guy, man. John Swan. We sat and had dinner at Vern's and talked over a table in the middle of the dining room. So might be a little distracting, some background noise, but it is what it is. It's real. It's in the element. And as I mentioned, there is breaking news in this podcast, and I appreciate you listening. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the great John Swan. This is awesome because it's like I have the John Swan in one of your legendary restaurants inside of Vern's. But I have a concern, John.
Okay.
I was thinking about it on the way here.
All right.
You're going to run out of grandparents to name things after.
That's true. That's funny.
Is Leonore, is that grandma? Or
yeah.
Who's
yeah. Yeah.
Was that Vern's wife?
Yes, it was.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
She was my favorite. Absolute favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does the other side of the family jealous at all? The other grandma and grandpa? Or the
I think if they were still living, they might be. I'm sure my mom wonders, why is it my dad's parents that get named after?
Yeah, because wasn't mom the restaurant? She was the restaurateur, right?
Yeah.
So I've had you on before and we've done the history, but let's do the history again real quick.
Sure.
Mom was a restaurateur.
She was.
So you grew up seeing this world.
Exactly. Through
what
the
was
eyes
your
of a dishwasher.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Really?
So I was a dishwasher for her at her first restaurant for maybe a year and a half. She actually ended up firing me at one point for complaining.
Get out of here.
Yep. And then
that's amazing.
Yeah, finished up high school.
Do you ever tell that story sometimes if like anything, like if you have a troubled soul who you want to like save?
Sure.
Do you ever end up telling them like, listen, I was fired from my first restaurant
sure.
job?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes people respond to different sorts of encouragement.
Yeah.
That's certainly, nobody's above anything. I tend to bring that one up.
Yeah.
And I try to lead by that example, too, as I work. And that's something I learned certainly from my mom. She's certainly still not above anything. She'll come into the restaurants and pick up a towel, and she'll be on her hands and knees picking,
Is that touching when you see that? Are you like, that is amazing?
Yeah. I mean, it's inspirational for sure.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel like you're doing the right thing and we're caring about the right thing still. And, we haven't taken anything for granted.
Yeah. This is about you, not me, but I do want to just tell you quick. I have a similar experience. When we first opened up my little plant, which you've seen, the craft cannery, one of those first couple of weeks, whatever, my mom came out. She wanted to see her son has a factory, right? She wants to see it. And I'm talking to people. There's a bunch of people there. And at one point, I just noticed out of the corner of my eye, my mother has picked up a broom, and she's, like, sweeping a corner.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that's so sweet. Like, she wants to help. She just wants so badly to do something.
What I loved when I went over there to your spot, you showed the desks. I think your aunt gave to you or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's fantastic because they stick out like sore thumbs.
Yeah.
But I love that. I thought that
they're
was cool.
Like they're these beautiful wooden desks that belong in like a I don't know some real like business person's office.
Yeah, very executive style.
And I got them
a warehouse
in a warehouse.
Yeah, people are tasting sauce. It's cool.
Yeah. So anyway, so mom owns a restaurant. Or mom owned or worked at?
She owned it. Yeah.
Okay.
She founded it with her boyfriend at the time, and it was in Bushnell's Basin. It was called West Coast Cafe. I think it was ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was had a very adventurous menu, an unbelievable wine list, and I just don't think it was quite hitting with the folks out in Pittsford at the time. And
then, what did she do before that, if I could ask?
Well, she had just before that actually founded a string of coffee bars called Sorelli. She had one at MCC, one at the Chase Tower. She did a couple of those. I also worked at those.
Yeah.
But before that, she watched kids for a living. She you know did a daycare service.
Like a real one or like living room kind of under the table.
In our house.
Yeah.
Table.
Yeah, you know? By the way, some of those people have blown up.
Oh,
people who started in their living rooms. There's a couple. Is it called Doodlebugs in Rochester?
But that wasn't a living room startup.
I'm pretty sure that woman started in her living room. And then also we have a friends in Saratoga Springs, who now they live in Marco Island. They live in Marco Island.
Whoa.
Year-round. Started a daycare in her living room.
Switched.
Yeah, well, yeah, no. Yeah. This is more fun.
True.
That's stressful.
Oh my God, yeah.
But anyway, so you saw entrepreneurship, though. You lived with entrepreneurship. So you saw the ups and downs of what it is like.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I recognize it was difficult. I recognize there was hard work. But it's also just kind of a way of life. And a lot of people say, how do you ever turn it off? It's like, well, I don't. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're the same way. I come across entrepreneurs all the time that have that same kind of mentality. And if they don't have that mentality, I think that they just get out of it pretty quick. And they say, well, I want to hang it up and I want to do the 9-to-5 now and be able to turn it off. And I totally respect that, too. For me, you know, it's so ingrained in me.
You melt it all together.
Sure.
And and your real life bleeds into here and this bleeds into your real life and it's just you. I don't know how to explain it. People say work-life balance. I don't know what that is. It doesn't exist.
I don't either. And you know, I think one thing that I've come to realize over the past several years, I've got a really supporting wife and mm-hmm. family. You know, she understands it. Her mom is although she doesn't own the company, she's working for, she's just one of those honest type people.
Yeah.
She kind of lives it too. And I think Sarah, my wife, is at least sympathetic to, you know, the needs and wants of the business and for the family. And you need that too, I think.
So you have full support of like, look, I'm not going to be home till midnight. I'm not going to be home till 2, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not always perfect. You know, it's hard, but you learn to live a certain way and
totally.
It's definitely working for us now.
Yeah. So you've seen that your mom has this restaurant,
mm-hmm.
She had the coffee bar, she has the restaurant, and you see this life. At that time in your life, did you think that's what I want to do when I grow up? Or were you like, I'm not getting anywhere near that?
I honestly thought I wasn't going to get anywhere near it.
Was there anything that scared you about it? Or was it just didn't interest you at that time?
I just think I was a little naive. I don't think I thought about it. It's just what I was doing at the time, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I just want a little extra, you know, shopping money or whatever the heck it was as a kid, you know. Which you do what you got to do. And I, from an early age, I think the expectation was instilled in me that I'm going to be working. And I wanted to. I liked the little personal freedom. I was the first kid with a car in my class. Like I tried to, mm-hmm. you know, worked hard to, you know, buy it and do all the things I had to do for that. I actually, in full disclosure, my mom bought it and then I kind of had to pay for it too.
I'm sorry, you made a deal.
That worked.
You wheeled and dealed.
Yeah, I don't
already know. Entrepreneurial. Yeah. You're figuring things out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a kid. Some kids are born with like that that drive to be hard work, I don't necessarily think it was. I don't even think I thought of it. I just kind of fell into it personally.
Yeah. Yeah. But you did have a different job at one point, didn't you? Weren't you working a regular job?
During college, I was doing the coffee shop. I actually ended up buying the coffee shop for my mom through work, like sweat equity style transfer. And then my mom opened Sabone at the time. So I'm doing the coffee shop at MCC. I decided to figure out how to have people manage it so I could go take a sales job and have that on the side. Did the sales job for about a year and a half. Worked for a really like a visionary type guy, actually, who's local, still doing really well. His name's Gary Salzman from Whole Latte Love, now in Henrietta. And but sales, cubicle, phone life, doing the calls was not for me.
Yeah, you were miserable.
It just wasn't fulfilling at all, and. I'm kind of a grinder type guy. I like to tinker. I like to build stuff, you know, and restaurants certainly offer you plenty of chances to have to fix things.
Yeah.
That's kind of worked out well, but one day I think I hit my limit at the sales job, decided I'm going to put in my 2 weeks, signed a lease next door to mom's restaurant, Sabone. It's now Dorado. It's Dorado now. And I built it. On a very small budget, sold my car to finish it up, and off we went.
Dude, that is such a beautiful story.
Thanks.
That you sold your car to finish Dorado.
I did.
Like
$5,000.
You have an empire now, but you sold your car to finish the last couple things you needed to like cobble together. Like I mean, what was day one?
I was scraping. Oh my god.
What was day one of business like at Dorado?
Really slow. I never had a day without a single sale except one. So 6 months in, I'm worried.
Yeah.
Because I was waiting for a liquor license. At the time, it was really, really difficult to get one, or maybe it was. It was for me, at least.
Yeah.
So they had me in a long wait. 6 months in, really worried, not making money. People are liking the food that they get. There's just not enough people coming in.
Yeah.
The Dorado's really small. If you've been, it's 10 tables.
Yeah.
So one day, you know, and I'm going in there. I'm opening, you know, so open a restaurant. You know, you turn the lights on. You're getting everything clean. You're prepping the food. You get the food ready. Now you open the door. You wait for people to come. Okay, if somebody orders, I'll make the drink. I'll make your food. Then I'm delivering. I'm doing all of it.
Are you literally a one-man show? Like, you're running the entire...
Often in the early. I had maybe one or two employees here and there in the first 6 months. And so one day, I get all the way to 8 p.m. I'm about to close at 9. Two people walk in, and, you know, they ring up a little bill of $46, and it's like the only people in there. And I went down to them, and I'm like, look, you guys were the only people that came in this whole day. I'm buying her dinner. This is going to be my low point. And I don't know if that what shifted, but after that, you know, I came in with a different mindset, a little more optimism, because I was kind of getting a little
You're starting
shaky.
To already be like, uh-oh.
Yeah, what did I do
here? Yeah.
But I really invested myself in trying to get my systems down up in the kitchen to make sure I was, you know, I could train somebody and teach somebody to do something so I could be down on the floor more and get maybe stand on the side, do whatever I got to do. Then the liquor license came, and then it was Park Ave Fest a week later.
And oh, yeah. Now we're talking.
And then it went.
You got booze and Park Ave Fest.
See you later. And it was crazy. And I had some really fun days after that. And
can I pick apart a few of the things you said? And I mean that in a good way.
Sure.
All right. So first of all, the thing that I noticed that you said that was so amazing was that you had the joint at MCC, the coffee shop, and you figured out how to put the right people and systems in place so that you could go do the sales job, right? I think there's this thing I talk about sometimes called second stage entrepreneurship, which is the stage that I feel like I've been in now for a couple of years, which is at the beginning, you're muscling the business, like what you're talking about at Dorado. You're doing everything. Mm-hmm. At one point, it grows to where you physically cannot do everything. It is literally impossible.
Right.
And you have to understand how to put people and processes in place so that it can run without you literally doing it. And you already had not that Not that it's exactly the same thing, but you already had the ability to do that, to put a person and a process in place and walk away from that coffee shop for the better good of the overall mission, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant. Second, the fact that you had the wherewithal to have that low moment, that $46 bill, and say, I'm going to live in a moment, in this low moment right now. I'm going to allow this to, I am down. But starting tomorrow, I come in a better mood. Yeah. The fact that you had the wherewithal to make that mental flip is huge. Huge.
I haven't forgotten the day. Those people became regulars.
Yeah.
I learned, I don't know. Something happened.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah, they owe you $46. I'll be honest with you. No, I'm just kidding.
I should track them down. With interest.
Yeah. So Park FS happens. Now Dorado goes. At this point, something flips.
Yeah.
You got your liquor license, which is huge.
Yeah, and it went. I mean, I'm not saying I went that crazy. I mean, but it turned to profit.
Yeah.
It started turning profit. And I'm like, all right, got something to go here.
And I hate to talk about how important liquor is, but you are the second uber successful restaurateur that I have interviewed who said that things turned around when the liquor license came.
Yeah.
The other one was John Stage of Dinosaur Barbecue.
Oh,
who
sure.
Opened up in Syracuse.
Well, barbecue and beer and, you know, tacos
but
and tequila.
He was a felon. He couldn't get a liquor license, so he had to bring on a partner.
Whoa.
Then he had to go through some extra process. So he, if I remember right, might have been 2 years or something. He is hanging on by a string 2 years into that first dinosaur in Syracuse.
Wow.
As soon as the liquor license comes in, he's off to the races.
Yeah.
He never looks back.
Well, and I, people sell alcohol with different intentions. And my intention from the beginning, even with Dorado, was that this is part of your experience. This isn't, I'm not trying to get, you know, people drunk, although people do.
Yeah.
it's part of the experience, and it's a complementary portion of what you're trying to, you know, do that evening.
Yeah.
You eat your taco, and it better have a beer with a little salt and some lime on it. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that's how I view it, and that still holds true all the way through Leonore's now. I think we have complementary menus, and it's very important to us. And
man, the freaking time when you I just want one more thing before we move on about the dark days of Dorado.
Sure.
Do you ever think back to that kid that worked in Dorado, you as a kid?
Yeah.
And think if you had been able to go back in time right now and be like, oh, hey, listen, young John, one day you're going to own that one and that one and that one and that one and that one.
No.
You would have been like, get the fuck out of here.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, I didn't even know what income was. I couldn't see past a week at that time. Things move fast when you're starting a business and what people don't think about too with somebody starting a business, you're manufacturing a lifestyle that you don't know what you have no idea what it's going to be, and it's going to take you somewhere as an entrepreneur. The business drives your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you don't get to pick what it ends up being.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. It's I'm the worst podcaster ever, but it's a visual thing that I have, and there's a handful of people that know me that are going to know what I'm showing you. But it's a graph. It's the entrepreneurial graph of how your life is going to go. This is the prediction, right?
Oh, this is interesting.
And this is so wait a second. It's the second picture in my phone. It's what I planned, and then what happened.
It's got to be a T-shirt, man.
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
It's a graph that just shows basically how unpredictable and what you just said about how you have to follow it. You can predict it as much as you want, but the public is going to tell you.
Yeah.
And you got to follow what they're telling you.
Which is a big lesson I learned early on. Early design for Dorado was going to be a lot more Spanish. I have a section of the bar that was a little raised up, and it was supposed to have a mount for like a Serrano ham on a saber, and somebody was going to carve it up. I was going to offer you a glass of wine and
do
all that, have it a little more refined. I'm thinking, this is going to be 10 tables. I got to maximize, you know, the dollar per seat, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Nope, nobody wanted that. So quickly got rid of the wine list, and I got some old crazy pictures you could see. The whole back wall used to be wine shelves.
Cool.
And I replaced it all with tequila, and then there wasn't enough room for all that, and I started hanging it from the ceiling. And
yeah, yeah.
c'est la vie, but...
So I do want to move on beyond Dorado, but I keep forgetting that we got to catch something else up in this story, and that is the fact that your sisters are also along for a lot of this ride.
Yeah.
I mean, today they're obviously... you know, along for the entire ride, but at that time, you're the oldest, I think, right?
Yep.
At that time, when you're in this Dorado world, are they in yet, or are they still too young?
Well,
or?
I mean, they're, you know, just like me, they were doing some of the service stuff for my mother. She, you know, Ashley was a cook. Paulina was a, you know, kind of a do-it-all cook, you know, server. Maybe she was dishwashing, too. I don't remember. But they also had their stints away. Ashley, around the time I started Dorado, she actually went to go get her culinary degree at the French Culinary Institute in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So she was gone for maybe a year or two doing that. Ended up graduating, coming back, had the passion for French cuisine. That's when Sabon kind of switched later on to Roux. So yeah, she's a fantastic talent.
Yeah, what is Thanksgiving like at your guys' house? Like, I mean, is it like what?
It's good. I mean, it's really good.
Like, I mean, the talent in that room.
It's pretty good. You know, the. I mean, there's a lot of silence from our dates or our spouses or whatever.
Yeah. Do you have any just like non-restaurant people in the family who come to Thanksgiving? They're just like, holy shit.
Yeah. Occasionally. Yeah. We've had some outsiders come and they're just like, whoa, this is pretty.
This is great.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Okay, so now the empire starts to begin, right? Dorado is now, it's off to the races. Mm-hmm. What comes next? What's the next thing after that?
So one of my best friends in the world, his name's Cameron. Known him since high school. We started the Daily Refresher together. I had been going to trips down to New York for inspiration for Dorado and for to help at Sabon where I could, too. And I was inspired by PDT, an old cocktail bar.
Cool.
And I was like, this could definitely work at home, you know. And I was, for some reason, I was really into the elevated drinks. I don't know why. I was selling beers and margaritas at Dorado. I don't know what occurred to me. But also at the same time, Good Luck was going. That was a transformative restaurant for the area, I think. And it was really inspirational for me at the time, too. And Cam and I just said, I'm ready to start again. Let's do it again. And so I think he was working at Xerox at the time, convinced him to come over. We did the same thing. We took over what was called the Blue Room, you know, complete build out ourselves, you know, again.
Jesus, I can't believe
my money again.
You just said Blue Room and you brought up some memories, bro.
Oh, sure.
Oh yeah. Go on.
Yeah. So you can imagine there was, there was a turnover. So. Again, we built that out, he and I, and with a goal of bringing really high-level cocktails to the area and an expanded whiskey list to expose people to that. And somehow, I think, it's not like I was doing research to see what the next wave was going to be. I got lucky. Whiskey went nuts. Or maybe just my experiences in New York exposed me to it, and I thought that was trendy and cool, so I piggytail. I don't know exactly how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Another good experience. Then I bartended for 2 years.
At Refresher?
Yep.
And so you got good at that, right? And that was that in your skill set before then, or did you really hone it there?
I learned. We opened that I'd never made a Manhattan.
Really?
I'd probably drank two. You know, I knew about gimlets because my grandpa and you know, stuff like that, but I forced myself. Yeah, real force myself. I enjoyed learning about that. I've always been interested in flavors and cuisine, so it's kind of a natural, you know, transition to go into that. And we were experimental, too. We were smoking drinks really early on. We were, you know, using flavor additives that people hadn't thought of before around here. And you know, I think we were kind of on the cutting edge.
You were. Yeah, you guys definitely were. Yeah. In fact, later when things like Revelry would come around and people would say like, oh, they're doing cocktails. It would always come up that it was like, oh, like the Daily,
yeah,
right? Like, oh, the Daily. Like, yeah. I feel like that was referenced a lot. Like, you guys really got credit, I think, for starting it.
Yeah, I think certainly Good Luck, Daily, Cheshire, Revelry. We're all right in that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're the catalyst spots.
Yeah.
Know, for the. What, you know, the revolution of cocktails in Rochester. I mean, think I've traveled a lot, and at that time I certainly was traveling a lot too, trying to get inspiration. And I thought Rochester, and I still think Rochester's maybe the one of the best, you know, I don't know, per capita, what do you want to call it, restaurant scenes, certainly cocktail scenes.
It's really impressive, isn't it, for the size of the city?
Absolutely.
How many good restaurants you can go to?
Absolutely.
It's crazy.
I mean, I have a chip on my shoulder about that still.
Yeah.
You know, and I try harder with every restaurant I open to, you know, put us on the map.
Is there an actual group of people who hate on the Rochester restaurant scene, or is it almost like you make it up in your head and you're like, I'm going to keep proving them wrong? Or is there real, actual, does that exist?
I don't think it's the hate. It's the zero recognition.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I give credit to, you know, Reddington. You know, he comes and he brings a pedigree to the city and, you know, take it for what it is. You know, it's not where he got his start. He didn't put Rochester on the map. Rochester's been here, but anything we can get us on the map here.
I agree.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, so, I agree.
And I think they just got recognized for some national recognition.
USA Today had him for one of the best restaurants in the country.
Yeah, and then I know Richard, and I know the place, and I respect it. And then even something like that puts a little chip on my shoulder. It's like, why is it just the one that already had accolades that brought that? How is it not the organic, like the Austin 15-20 years ago?
Yeah.
Austin, Texas. How did that happen?
Well, how do we fix it? How can I help? What do we got to do?
You know, I don't know. You know, I think that we have to be barking up the right trees. I think that they're, you know, we gotta scream from the rooftops. I don't know.
Who's like the single most influential foodie influencer in the country?
I know. We've got to find them.
Yeah, and buy their plane ticket. I'll split it with you. Let's buy their plane ticket and get them here and take them through like 2 days worth of just breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Wouldn't that be great?
I would do it in a heartbeat. I don't know who the person is.
Me neither.
But somebody who has national attention, we got to be honest with you, we just got to foot their bill, I think.
Yeah, I think that's it too.
Yeah, like let's just buy their plane. But again, like I said, I'll freaking split it with you. Let's get them to town and just curate a couple days for them.
Yeah.
And we could probably do it.
Something.
Yeah, I don't know who the person is.
Yeah, there's
That's
so
the
many
question.
Good spots too. And just there's divey, great divey spots. There's really high end restaurants that are really good. There's good great bakeries. There's
a lot of talent in this town. There really is.
It's unique.
Yeah, where do you go other than your own places if you ever have time to go anywhere else?
Yeah.
Where do you go that you respect that when you go in you're like, damn, they're good. That's not one of your own places.
I love Rocco.
Guess who I was with about 3 hours ago?
Marky.
I'm on a marathon of three podcasts.
Yeah.
You're the third of three.
Is that?
He was the last podcast.
Yeah, I love Mark.
I just came from there. I ate a porchetta sandwich in the car.
Oh, baby.
Right in my passenger seat right now.
So, I open Pearson's now, so I'm there a lot. But when I have time, I like to squeak over to Bodega and get one of I get the Audacity sandwich.
How does he do? You'll know. You're gonna know the answer to this. Actually, I need to know a secret. How does he get the freaking skin on the pork to melt in your mouth? How do you do that?
I don't know.
It's perfect.
I think so. My favorite dish in the city is his pork.
Yeah.
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 And the tricolor salad. I get the same thing every time I go there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really cool. We did the interview in Rella. Just me and him just sitting in Rella. And it was just, I don't know, it was kind of
cool.
Yeah, it was really kind of cool.
So I go there a lot. I'll go to Good Luck still. I sit at the bar. It's kind of a nostalgia. It's where my wife and I had our first smooch.
Aww.
It's a nostalgic place for me.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. So we'll skip ahead a little bit, but the daily, and then is Ox and Stone next?
Ox is next.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things, like across the street, saw the building. I thought, you know, this is where my parents said that they used to go. I knew the luster had washed. Nobody talked about it. How is that? When you walk in there, it's so beautiful. I thought, all you got to do is get some people in here and show them the space, provide them a good meal and good drinks, and you're off to the races. And that proved to be, a winning move there.
It seems like they're all winning moves so far, John. Give me a story of a failure. Well, the very beginning of Dorada.
Yeah, that was tough. You know, it's what is failure? I financially, I... you know, they're not all winners. You know, it's not exactly my motive. Like, if an accountant might have a different view of what is the winner and what's not.
Yeah,
Than I have.
That's an interesting
point. Leonore's is a good example. That's not a place that's just killing it from a money perspective. It's not earning. In fact, I don't think I've taken a paycheck still there. But that's not the point. You know, that's, again, my chip on my shoulder. I want the best restaurant experience, not just for me and have that trophy on my wall. I want to strive for the best restaurant for the community, for the city to get recognized. And that's what Leonore's was. It's how different can we push this? How much of an experience can we push?
So if you're happy, and I understand exactly what you're saying, you walk in there and you're proud of it, even if maybe the bottom line isn't there yet, right? Mm-hmm. Do you look at the whole family and create essentially basically a blended margin and say, well, as long as it blends correctly, I'm cool?
At the end of the day, if I go bankrupt, I'm done, right? So I got it. Yeah. So I kind of blend it.
So as long as the blended comes together right, you're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. And I mean, I think just so with an effort like Leonore's, I very well could have just opened a burger place, you know. But with an effort like that, I'm trying to shape the community in a certain way from a cultural perspective. And I'm not talking about, you know, it's Thai inspired. I'm talking experience. I want people to be able to enjoy a range of different experiences in a very tight-knit area, walkable area. In this small community of Park Avenue, and obviously we pull in people from all the rest of the city and the suburbs too. But that's the real goal.
Yeah.
Welcome to Behind the Studio Door, where we dig into the vibrant creative landscape of Rochester, New York. Hi, I'm Molly Darling, and along with my co-host Christian Rivera and our fabulous producer Chris Lindstrom, it's my pleasure to guide you through the dynamic world of our local creative professionals. Each episode offers a unique glimpse into the studios of those who enrich our Rochester community with their artistic vision. Join us as we explore the diversity and talent in Rochester, revealing the compelling narratives and creative journeys that exist just beyond the studio door.
Hello, listeners. This is Richard B. Colon reminding you all to check out the Behind the Glass Gallery podcast hosted by myself and Kwaje Donnell. Every month, we interview the latest First Friday featured gallery artists and dive deep into their passion, drive, and motivation beyond what they display on our gallery walls each month in downtown Rochester, New York. So please, if you haven't yet, subscribe and give us a listen. Also, don't forget to check out our monthly artist receptions every first Friday of the month from 6 to 8 p.m. 240 East Main Street at the Mercantile on Main. Hoping to see you all behind the glass.
After Ox, what is next after that then?
Swan Dive.
Oh my God, I freaking love Swan Dive. Yeah, can I tell you one of the greatest compliments I've ever gotten in my entire life was from Paulina. And it was, didn't you guys for Swan Dive open on like St. Patrick's Day for like one day and then you didn't open again for like a month or
That's
something
right.
like that?
Yeah.
And she was like, we decided kind of last minute we were going to open just for like a day.
Yeah. And some money. Yeah.
And she goes, so we had to like kind of cobble it together. So she said, we went to the grocery store and bought your sauce.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
Absolutely.
And that
lot of it.
The first
I think we
day,
cleared the rack.
You could have called me. I would have brought you like pouches.
Sorry.
You know, it's okay. But I would have brought you, so you wouldn't have to open up all those jars. Anyway, but that was the greatest compliment I've ever gotten because I was expecting her to then say it sucked.
No, man.
Because she's very good, right? But then she was like, it was great. And I was like, oh my God, she said it was great. And like, I literally went through like the next 3 days and I was like, Paulina Swan said she liked my pizza sauce. I was telling her, I was like, tell my wife, and I'd be like, Paulina Swan said she liked my pizza sauce.
Yeah, she's picky. That is an achievement.
It was pretty good. Yeah. Anyway, okay. So Swan Dive opens up next, and the single greatest story in the history of Rochester restaurant online reviews.
Oh, yeah. I know where you're going.
is when somebody says something about, and I was ready to kill this person too, because the best fucking thing I ever had was those giant ass mozzarella sticks
at Freakin' Swan
all day, and they're finally on DoorDash too.
Yeah, because
I have a kid. I mean, I'm lazy also, but also I have a kid, so I can't always go.
Yeah,
but they're finally on DoorDash, and somebody wrote something negative about the mozzarella sticks, and you responded with a several paragraph long history of fried cheese.
I couldn't help myself.
That was the best.
I can't. You know, sometimes I'll pipe up on there. You know, people. It's funny how people just look at products or their restaurants and the expectations they put on you. It's just funny sometimes.
Oh my God.
It's bizarre. But, you know, we're just people trying the best we can with mozzarella sticks. The way we put our music, the dimness of our lights, you know, we put all these things together. They're all going to be critiqued by some people and loved by others. It's the nature of it. So what we do.
Hey, if you're going to sit there, one rule, you got to be on the podcast. Is that all right? You'll be, we're talking about, did you know they just sat someone next to us? Do you know who that guy is right there? That's a celebrity.
Yeah, no.
That's Vern's grandson right there.
That's me.
That's freaking John Swan. Yeah. Sorry, John. I'm very proud of
him. I'm blushing.
This is his freaking restaurant. How cool is that? Yes. Anyway.
Thanks for being here.
Sorry, I'll probably do that a lot to you because I'm just excited to know you. So so anyway, Swan Dive is next.
Yeah.
Is Vern's after that then? What am I missing?
Yeah.
At this point, I can't even remember them all.
Yep.
Do you have a hard time remembering them all?
Sometimes.
You ever list them all and then you're like, wait, I missed one.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing. It's crazy. I got a lot going on. But no, yeah, Vern's was next. Somewhere in there, too, we switched the bone to Rue.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember when that was. Maybe when Oxenstone opened or something. But, yeah, so Vern's is next, and this is again. So each single time I've taken everything I've made. Okay, here we go. Let's do another one. And then I go in, and I got the place. I'm building it. I'm going right back to square one again.
Mm-hmm.
Over and over, I keep doing this to myself.
So I do notice your hair is grayer than when I first met you.
Yeah,
mine is also.
Yeah.
I understand. Are you saying basically that you get it to the point where you're doing well, and then you basically cash it in and you go back down to like, all right. Are you addicted to risk at all? Are you an adrenaline junkie in that way?
No, I'm risk adverse. Sarah will laugh because I won't get on a horse. I don't like flying. Never going on a helicopter. I'm just like, you know, I'm just kind of like that. I like social experience. I like being out and I like providing the place for it.
Yes.
Yeah. My thing. I love knowing that people feel enchanted by the place I built and built with other people, and I like kind of galvanizing the team that brings it to life. That's what I like to do.
Yeah. Are you, when Vern's opens or Leonard's or any of them really, how much are you into the details of the menu? Are you writing that menu? Are you hiring? Are you collaborating? Is it Paulina? Is it Ashley?
Is it the menu part?
Yeah. For Vern's, Leonard, any of them really.
So my mom birthed a restaurant team. You know, so my sister, so how do I put, Paulina and Ashley are the masterminds behind most of the initial menus.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm the one, and they'll be a little experimental typically, and a lot of the times it'll be me that has a knack for marketability of certain things and understanding, I think, what will sell and what people want. And so quickly on that first menu at Vern's, I think, like with the lost meatball was on it, and I had it, and I think my palate is good, but I don't have the skill set that they do to actually create it.
Mm-hmm.
But I know when we've hit, and they do too.
Yeah.
So we're all on board with it, but they're so quick to want to, well, let's make something the next great thing. And I love that energy. So that's why all of our menus have this a few staples and then seasonable rotational items.
Yeah.
So I identify lost meatball. We're not moving that ever.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
That's never coming off.
Are they more, like you said, are they more of the creative types who are constantly wanting, like, next thing, new thing, new.
Yep.
And you're more like, well, that one is a hit. So we play the hits. Like the Rolling Stones, they got to play Satisfaction, even though they're so sick of freaking playing
great
Satisfaction.
Great metaphor. The perfect band. That's my mom's favorite band.
Yeah. But they're sick of playing it. But it's the freaking some people bought the ticket to see that song.
Yeah, and you got to recognize it's like people come in. I mean, at some point, Vern's I think has hit it out of the park for us. You know, in a lot of ways. I mean, it's exactly what I'd hoped it was going to be from what we wanted to offer. We wanted a really warm, inviting place where that kind of reminded us of our grandparents' house. You know, that kind of experience. There's tons of people in there and.
Yeah,
feeling that way, and it's definitely a credit to the food. So now I think what our responsibility is to expose as many people to that dish and that experience as we possibly can.
Yeah,
and so if you always have the changing menu, which is a completely different sort of experience, which I also love and respect. It's just not right here.
Yes.
It's not for us.
Yes.
At this restaurant.
So Leonor's comes after Vern's, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's the cuisine over there?
So it's Thai inspired. That's the initial menu is largely Thai inspired. We'll always have like a heavy Thai influence there, but we'll also sprinkle in things from India and other parts of Asia. We're starting to say, hey, there's no rules on this menu. We're working on something I'm really excited about right now, and actually more so our chef over there, Anna, who's a real talent, is working on a Big Mac riff.
Yes.
And it's we're really excited about that. So just as an example, we're not afraid to do things there.
You said a Big Mac?
Big Mac.
Okay. All right. I do know one thing. As a former McDonald's employee, there is no ketchup in the Mac sauce.
Is that right?
It's true, actually. Yes. Look up there's a show. I'll tell you after. I'll send you a link to it. But the there's a old R&D chef from McDonald's who has the Big Mac sauce recipe and gives it out. There's no ketchup.
Oh, wild.
Yeah. There's like paprika. You know what? It's Dusseldorf. Okay, so it's... Son of a bitch. It's like Dusseldorf mustard is one of the other tricks, which is like a weird mustard to come across.
Interesting.
Paprika, I'm pretty sure, is where that pinkish or orangish color comes from.
We make what we call it golf sauce at Oxy Stone. Special sauce.
Yeah.
You know, the equal mayonnaise, mustard, ketchup, trinity.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that one.
Yeah.
And we put some salt and pepper in it or whatever. And I always thought that was... Because I've never actually had a Big Mac in my life.
What?
I've never had...
Have you ever been to McDonald's?
I've had a couple of the fries.
Wait a second. Are you trying to tell me that you've like barely been to McDonald's in your entire life?
I've never had a fast food burger from any of the big chains. I've had a Five Guys. I like Five Guys.
Are you? Excuse my language. Are you fucking shitting me right now?
No.
You've never had a fast food burger?
Not one.
How?
At this point, it's the thing.
Now it's a thing. Right.
Now I can't do it. But
what?
I was grossed out by it for when I was in high school.
What did you eat in high school? That's all I survived on.
Freaking Pittsford Pontillos, man.
Yeah, okay, that's pretty good.
I would eat Tom Walls. I ate Tom Walls when I was
a kid. That kind of counts, but you know what? Not completely counts because it has to come from like a traditional, like McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King.
Yeah,
like
I
that
had
you've
any
never
of those.
Had.
Never.
Oh my God.
Now I can't do it. So.
I think I found it. So there's this guy, Chef Mike. He's on TikTok, and he's fantastic. Mike Harricks, H-A-R-A-C-Z.
Okay.
And
I
will. All right, mayonnaise, relish, Dusseldorf mustard. I remembered that one. White wine vinegar, granulated garlic, onion powder, paprika, and white pepper. The little bit of color in there is coming from a little bit of the mustard, but also the paprika, really.
Yeah, interesting.
Is where the color's coming from. But if you Google Big Mac recipe, Big Mac sauce recipe, a lot of people will say mayonnaise and ketchup. Yeah. Which is, like you were saying, like sort of a burger sauce. There is, like, if you go west, like Utah, I think the most popular condiment in one of those weird western states is burger sauce, which is like ketchup, mayonnaise, and relish or something.
Yeah, how gross. Isn't that funny?
I cannot believe it.
Yeah. So that's a weird.
Has
that's
Anna?
A weird thing.
Has she had a Big Mac?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Do you? I just told her that the other day. She lost her mind.
Does everyone lose their mind that you tell that to?
Yeah. I think it's kind of weird at this point.
No, it's awesome.
Yeah. I can't do it now. I'm not doing it.
It's fantastic. Five Guys is good too. Yeah. You're right about that. Okay. All right. So Leonore's, and then finally Pearson's.
Pearson's. Yep.
Comes around.
Yep.
Coffee.
Yep. So Pearson's got its name. So you already shared Vern and Leonore, my grandparents.
Yeah.
We'd go up and visit them. And, you know, we're like, we're bored. Let's do something. They put a bunch of quarters and pennies in our hand. We walked down to the penny store candy place, or penny candy store place. And it was called Pearson's, little Swedish market in Jamestown.
And you loved it.
Loved it.
Yeah.
And so I thought, oh, this is pretty cute. I've got Vern, Leonore over here, and I'll just go down to Pearson's.
Oh,
and
it's
literally happening to me every day.
That is cute. It's like you get to relive childhood a little bit.
So it's what, cool.
Do you have, like, I made a joke at the beginning, you're going to run out of grandparents to name things after.
Yeah.
At some point, you're going to be down to opening up, like, Great Uncle Chuck's or something. Listen, Uncle Chuck,
that's
I know we
funny.
Haven't spoken in years, but I'm out of family members.
You know, it's fun to do it. I think that it... It wasn't intended. It wasn't planned. But I think when we did that, you know, it put an extra layer of emphasis on our intensity and wanting to keep things really good and consistent. Because if I'm going to put this guy's name on it,
yeah,
you know,
it's got to be good.
I can't. And so there's a little added pressure for me. And like on our menu here, there's my Uncle Denny's peppers, his actual recipe. His peppers are in the chopped salad here. And
that's awesome.
It's like, you better not mess up those peppers.
Yeah.
Don't. You know?
Yeah.
So it's a nice tribute.
Let me ask you a question. I can't ask you this too loud. The public, when you're at a nice restaurant like this is a nice restaurant, right?
Sure.
When you're at a nice restaurant, are you immune from the public occasionally bitching about things? Or does that happen ever?
What do you mean? With the papalese?
It feels like, no, in general, the public can be a little whiny about things. Certain people,
sure.
Sometimes.
Oh, yeah,
most definitely. People are great, and I should say that. But like we said
Liner's
before, the negative comment on Facebook, there's always going to be somebody who didn't care for the steak or something.
Yeah, it happens
you know.
All the time.
Does that happen at nice restaurants like this?
Yeah.
It does happen here?
Yeah.
How the hell are you going to come to a nice restaurant like this, and then if you're that good, go home and make your food?
You know, I mean... Hey, you come in, we're people. You know, we make mistakes. There's no...
Yeah.
It's going to happen. So I you got to look at those as opportunities. And I try to coach my managers to think like that. So
on to coaching.
You gotta own them.
On to coaching, and I swear to God, I'll wrap up with you soon. I want to talk about leadership a little bit. At this point, you got a lot of people between all these restaurants. You walk in, you're the guy, you're the boss, right?
Yeah.
Leadership. Do you feel you're naturally a good leader? Have you had to learn to be a good leader? Are you a good leader?
Oh, man. There is a lot of nuance in leadership. Some pieces of it I think that I do well, and other pieces I don't.
Can you give me one on both sides?
Yeah. Something I do well... something that's occurred to me recently is you got to recognize what your weaknesses are as a leader and as an employee. And so I'm really good at recognizing what holes I have as the head employee of this company, right? And so I think I've done a pretty good job of delegating and encouraging people to fill those holes where needed. Case in point, I do not. One of the things I'm worst at is holding people accountable, and that's a really important thing because it's wrapped up in, oddly, their own fulfillment in the job. If they're allowed to, you know, come in and not do something to their fullest, or you know, it's okay to be mediocre, and that's the mentality. They're not going to be fulfilled in the job. So
you saying that over the years there's been situations where maybe somebody wasn't quite doing it right, and you just weren't sure how to go about.
My first instinct is to go fix it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
Because I can, and I do it well.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very capable. So I, in this job.
Yeah.
You know, in every job in a restaurant. So my instinct's to go do it myself. And as I've grown, that's impossible now. Very impossible. In fact, detrimental, because I'll just, for a lot of reasons, just won't work. So it's really important. We're still, you know, that's a challenge for us as you get, as we've gotten this. I have a lot of employees. And it's to keep it cohesive and keep people motivated and keep people held accountable for, you know, to our mission and our goals. It is a challenge, but it's one that I think a lot of people are excited to rise to, because it's a nice target to want to try to be the best and try to provide a great experience for people. We've got a lot of people that are bought into the idea and embraced it and converted their lifestyles according to it.
Isn't that like the greatest honor and compliment too?
When, totally.
I mean, because you there is a vibe, right? Your employees have a vibe, and they're proud to be here.
Oh, totally.
I mean, like, they are real. Like, those guys that you brought out to my joint, those guys are so freaking proud to be part of this group. I mean, what a treasure to find that.
Totally. Couldn't be more thrilled to have guys, you know, people like that on our team. It's, you know, it's something I learned, I think, was forced to learn during COVID. When you're doing your hiring, you know, conventional wisdom would say, you go find the most talented person you can find, put them on your team, and then you're going to be great. And you forgot the whole thing. You're trying to build a team. You don't need a bunch of great individuals. You need a bunch of people that work really well together. So what we started to do was hire for personality first. That started here at Vern's, and it's something I've tried to implement with all the restaurants. People with positive attitudes that are interested in whatever. People that are want to learn and that are open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be better learners. They tend to be more positive throughout the workday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then once you kind of get that, now you're talking. You've developed a little culture.
Yeah.
And now you're more resistant to the people that are going to be drags on that team, because, well, they get naturally, they naturally work themselves out.
That's so smart. I like that, you know, culture is so important, and I like how you go about building it. That's freaking brilliant. That's brilliant. I know that you're not going to stop, because you've exhibited that you're not going to stop.
Yeah.
So I think there's the idea that you're probably going to open something else at some point is likely.
Yeah, I'm always looking.
I would imagine, I think that people might think, I'm going to guess at something. Tell me if I'm wrong. It's okay if I'm wrong. I think probably people probably think you keep finding these opportunities. I would imagine at this point that you're constantly getting called with people saying, hey, such and such is available.
Oh, all the time.
Because you've shown that you're like the guy who's willing to move in and turn it into a restaurant.
Yeah, all the time.
So the options are coming your way. Yeah. What's your vetting process for this is the right option?
Honestly, I'm very it's all instinct and feel for me. If I walk into a space and I'm not feeling it, and I don't know what it is.
You talk about that first time you walk in.
Yeah, I got to see it. Well, I'm really good at being able to go in a space and imagine it as something different really quickly.
Yeah.
And if I don't have that moment and that spark really quick, it's not going to happen. So I consider a lot of opportunities and wait for those little moments. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not necessarily the space, it'll be people. And so we've developed this team of people we really like and treasure in the company. And it's those are the people that are gonna, you know, be brought along either equitably or just as part of the next thing, the next restaurant, the next place. And so sometimes it's just there's a little energy in the air, and we're all passionate about maybe we want to do a I don't want to give out too many secrets.
You got the next one up there, don't you?
Yeah, I got a couple kind of bopping around. When is this airing?
Like, this will be, I'll tell you exactly. So this will be on Sunday, March 16th.
Okay.
Still so too early?
No, I'll tell you. So... It might be news already. Some people already know, but the Ox and Stone, I'm closing. and reopening as something different.
Wow.
And it's a response to, it's in response to some just shifts in how people enjoy the East End.
Yeah.
And so, and we have a lot of interest in people wanting to do events at Rue, at Vern's, at Dorado, whatever. And we're not able to accommodate those requests. So what we're going to do is part restaurant, part event space. We're going to call it the Alexander.
Love it.
And we've already started renovating. Really excited about it. Total different menu, continental, kind of new American, a little more playful. And approachable, I think, than certainly the Ox and Stone was. We're not serving crickets anymore.
You were always famous for that.
Yeah. So,
when were you planning on announcing this? We're, by the way, for context, for anyone listening, we're recording this on March 1st. So,
late March, somewhere in there.
Do you want? Would you ever let this be the breaking?
Sure.
So on March 16th. So 8 a.m. Sunday, March 16th.
I better text my mom. My mom's my partner on that.
Okay, all right.
Ox.
So at 8 a.m. on March 16th.
Boom, I better tell her.
This will be breaking news. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
So
yes.
We'll probably take the sign down, and I got to go to the preservation board and get the approval to change the sign and all that. So somewhere early April, the sign will change. But before that, we'll have already shifted our menu. And
yep.
So.
Yep. So paella? What are we doing about the paella?
No, I mean, I think we'll probably scrap that. We've like I said, it'll be more continental, more approachable. We got to be able to be top of mind for, you know, some. Nope, not. It's not often that somebody's thinking, I want paella.
That's true. That's true. But if it's ever an option, I never don't want it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Totally. Yeah. It's like addictive when you put the first spoon, it's the saffron. I don't know what it is.
Yes.
Like, wow, why don't I ever think about this? Well, it's because we're not Spaniards.
Yeah.
We're Americans.
That's true. Okay, for me to fully understand this, when did you make that decision? How long ago was that?
We fully committed about a month ago.
Oh, so it's pretty recent.
Yeah.
Had you been hemming and hawing a little about that for a while?
Yeah, you know, it's Ox and Stone's been open 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, had a great run. And things changed, shifted. It's not doing what it needs to do. And, you know, I'm psyched to change it.
Yeah. You know? Well, congratulations.
Thanks, man.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not trying to push for too much here, but just because I'm really, really interested in how far ahead you are in your mind, because
yeah.
I think it's a brilliant mind, the thing after the Alexander, whatever that's going to be, is that born yet in your head, or is it like, I just got to get the Alexander
done
first?
Yeah, definitely got some things.
It's already born?
So the conversion of the Alexander for us is, because we have such a team, we have a big team, we have all the stuff. We bought, it's going to look different. So that part of it isn't a hard,
yeah.
It's not a big transition for me.
Yeah.
So I can still be entertaining other things. I do have a couple ideas, some on Park, you know, some in the burbs.
Love it.
And things that I really want to pursue.
Okay. All right. We are taking up the last table, so we got to go. Because now I'm costing you money by being here. Thank you so much for
appreciate
doing this.
Appreciate it, man. This is fun.
I appreciate you very much. Can we talk about bottled sauces for 2 seconds?
Yeah.
It's probably not weeks away, and by the time this is out, it's not going to exist yet. But within the next couple of months, you will see some of your brand's sauces, bottled sauces, available for sale.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Which is exciting.
Cannot wait.
Yeah.
We're making a big push into the merch, and you've been so helpful, by the way. Anybody looking to chase their dream on that, you got to work with Paul here.
I love you, buddy. Thank you.
I mean, seriously, it's so fun. The experience, by the way, I can't wait. I guess we're coming out in a couple weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, I'm going to be a little nervous that day. And I got this girl that works for me, Julia, who owns a little restaurant called Fat Girl Foods.
Uh-huh.
She started this little restaurant. She's open on, like, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays only.
Yeah.
Her and her girlfriend. And she is, like, giddy. Because she's been doing R&D for us.
Oh, really?
She, you know, she's still so early that she needs a job. And she's our prep.
Yeah.
She preps everything.
Okay.
And I told her, you guys were going to come out and do a dial-in at some point. She could work the dial-in.
Oh.
She's, like, giddy, but, like, a little nervous. It's really kind of cute, actually.
I hope you can let her know that I'm so transparent to a painful degree when it's like, this isn't right. But it's from such a good place. And sometimes I've found lately, I'm like, people are like, John, can you give me a little more positive feedback here and there? I'm like,
yeah.
No, I mean, you guys are great. You're amazing. But you need to, you know.
Yeah, change it all. I used to write radio commercials. I'm not, I used to get calls all the time that would say something like, oh, we love it. We do need you to change everything. Could you redo the whole thing? But we love it.
It's amazing.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, John.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.